Yeah, so I sent you the list of questions.
Yeah, I saw those. Yeah. Good questions.
So could you describe your journey to becoming the superintendent of APS in 1997?
Sure. If you're talking about a journey, I can take you on a long trip. But I started teaching in mid-1960s, and I was in 65, it was 65. And I taught social studies in a high school in Frederick, Maryland. Actually, it was Middletown, Maryland, in the Frederick County School District. And I worked in the Frederick County system for, I think it was 16 years. And when I left there, I was the director of curriculum and instruction for the county. And I left along with my superintendent, who took another superintendency in a suburban district outside of Houston called the Spring Independent School District. And so I spent another 16 years there as the assistant superintendent for curriculum instruction. And then my superintendent retired, and I started looking around the country. And I had no idea I'd end up back in the Washington area. I grew up in Silver Spring, Maryland. And Arlington was available, and it was one of a number of places where I interviewed. And I liked the board. They seemed to be good people. They had gone through a transformation. And it was a strong district. I didn't come in to save a failing district. I came in to make better a very good district. And so I did that, and I spent 12 years as a superintendent here. And then I retired at age 65. And then I worked for 10 years as a professor at George Mason University, preparing people who wanted to become school administrators. And so I had was teaching master's level classes and also doctoral seminars, and also carried a fairly full slate of folks who were writing their dissertations and was their advisor. Really enjoyed that. But after 10 years, I told you I was 65 when I left the schools. So at 75, I retired again. And so I've been retired for 7 years. 6 years.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is what happens when you get to be over 80. You forget stuff.
Ah.
So anyway, that's kind of the journey.
Oh, yeah, my mom is. It's okay. Yeah.
So in any event, also part of that history is also a history of my education, and I went through a small liberal arts. Well, first of all, I grew up in Silver Spring. I graduated from Blair High School. You may have heard of it. I don't know. Carpet Blair. And then I went to a very large university in the hills of West Virginia called Davis and Elkins College. You've heard of it?
No, I didn't think so.
And majored in history and political science there. And minored in English, come to think of it, yeah. And during the time that I was there, I participated in a program, I think it was the first semester of my senior year, which was a national program hosted by American University called the Washington Semester Program. And I think it still exists. When I was superintendent in Arlington, it still existed. I just checked on that to see if it's still going. And it brought in mostly history and political science majors in their junior or senior year for a semester-long experience at AU, in which we took, I don't know that they still do it the same way. I know the program is still current. We had a seminar group with a professor who was our guide, and we attended seminars with public officials that were all confidential. We were sworn to confidentiality, and the program had such a good reputation that the people actually understood that. And interviewed people and heard from people varied as legislative aides to senator, congresspeople, one Supreme Court justice. We never got to a president. And so that was part of the semester, and that was our seminar, and it was treated like a three-credit graduate class. And then we also had to write a paper, which was another three credits, and it was probably as demanding as my master's degree paper or master's thesis. And I wrote a paper. I'm giving you more detail than you probably want. I wrote a paper based upon interviews of mostly representatives and congressional aides, but it was all focused around the political process that resulted in a little box on a pack of cigarettes, which says, you can get cancer if you smoke these things. And so the focus of the study was the interaction of the political groups involved in helping to get that passed and fighting against it. And I was a smoker at the time, and I remember going into Representative Cornegay of North Carolina. He was right around Winston-Salem, where many cigarettes originated. And I would go into his office and he had little Camel cigarettes, little four cigarette packages. And I'd always get one of those and smoke one. And then I would leave there and I'd go to, I'm trying to remember his name, I'm blanking on it. His wife is still a Michigan congressperson. Debbie Dingell. So her husband was the main force in the House for getting that little label on the cigarette package. So anyway, it was really a study of that kind of political operation. And when I left Davis and Elkins, I went to teach in Frederick, and then I started I started the master's program in the summer. That's kind of a sad story. I was going to take my master's degree at AU since I had that experience there in the first semester of my senior year at Davis and Elkins, and recognized after I started teaching in the summer. I was driving a yellow cab in Silver Spring in D.C. and I realized that when I started teaching, I wasn't going to be able to afford to go to AU. I would have been able to as a cab driver. But as a teacher, no. So I switched to the University of Maryland and ended up getting my master's degree in political science from the University of Maryland. And not so long after getting the master's, finished my doctorate in education administration, also at the University of Maryland. So I think that was 1973 or so when I got that. So until I went to Houston, I worked at a number of administrative jobs in Frederick. And I think I said when I left there, I was director of curriculum and staff development, and then went as assistant superintendent in the Spring District, and spent another 16 years there. And when my superintendent retired, I don't think the board wanted me. it wasn't a surprise that it was okay. And so I didn't even bother applying. I did talk to the people who were the headhunters for filling the position. And the first half of my interview with them, I gave them a tutorial on the politics of the community. So they would have a sense of that. And then they spent the rest of the interview time telling me about other positions where they were directing the searches, which is clear that was not a surprise. In fact, it would have been very unusual. And so I started looking around the country and came very close to accepting a position in Michigan. But then the offer was withdrawn. I even had signed a draft contract with the board. But a local person entered the search late and apparently was a very, very divided community. And the board was divided, 4-3. And the four who won voted for the new person. So I missed that job. And then Arlington came up. I knew Arlington a little bit, not a lot, from my time in Maryland. And in fact, when my parents first moved to the Washington, D.C. area, we lived in Arlington for a couple of months, maybe, in a house that had been vacated by a former colleague of my dad's who was spending, along with his family, the summer in somewhere in Europe. And so we stayed in that house until my parents found a place that they wanted to get in Silver Spring. That's how I ended up in Maryland, staying there.
Do you know, like, around what year this was?
Yeah. Uh, 1950 was when we moved in this area.
Thank you.
Is that right? Yeah, that is right. That is right. Yeah, because I started in the Montgomery County Schools in second grade with Mrs. Anderson. He didn't write that down, I should have. I was kidding. So anyway, this is more detail than probably you want or need.
Everything's helpful.
So anyway, I looked around the country. Arlington became available. I had interviewed a number of other places, and it was pretty clear to me with my first meeting with the board that this was a group that I would get along with. And it had just undergone some major change. There had been some political machinations in Arlington. Of course, there are no longer such. And so it was a pretty new board, and ambitious, bright people. And some of them are still around. I had lunch just recently with Libby Garvey, who was one of those original board members and became chair of the county board after she left the school board. So she's still around. But she just retired from the county board.
When you were serving as a superintendent, like you said, like how it was, you know, at the time APS was going through like a period of change. How did your leadership kind of like help shape that and like guide in the directions sort of come today?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, the board was very interested in creating a new path, I think, for the county schools. And I got them involved in developing a 5-year plan. And we engaged the community in that. And we created a strategic plan based upon the work that we did with the community, which included obviously talking with groups, but also some fairly well-developed survey research as well. And then put together a committee with which I worked countywide, somewhere between 15 and 20 people. And we developed a draft 5-year plan. And I think the county's still doing that. And the top objective had to do with a startlingly stark and broad achievement gap, particularly for African American and Latino students. And I found it startling, even having spent some time in Texas, where those kinds of gaps are not unheard of, but the gap in Arlington was much starker. And it may have had something to do with also the divide in terms of family income. Between the Latino community and white community and the African American and white communities. But in any event, so that became essentially the most important thing we were working on. And it remained that way during the entire time that I was superintendent. And I believe that my successor maintained that, or at least the board maintained it, for at least a few years after I left. And so I think we developed a national reputation for the work that we were doing along those lines. I was the member of a group of superintendents from around the country called the Minority Student Achievement. Achievement wasn't a committee, achievement. In any event, I think it still exists. And I know that just a few years ago, it was Arlington was still a member of the group. And its office's final resting place, I don't know if it still is, was the University of Wisconsin. But it started out in Evanston, Illinois. But we were leaders in that, and we were one of the original school districts involved. I invited, of course, with the agreement of the group, the Alexandria political public schools to join us, and so they joined about maybe 7 or 8 years in. So the work around those kinds of issues, those kinds of equity issues, were paramount during the time that I was superintendent. I believe my successor, I suspect because of the board that was still there, maintained that for a while. I don't know if it continued or not. One of the things that I did when I decided to retire from the superintendency is that I was going to move. I didn't want to hang around Arlington and get involved, and it would have been both useless and inappropriate. But I did decide to teach at Mason, and so there was no reason for me to move. And but I just made the promise to myself, like, I was going to be ignorant of the schools. I was not going to interact with the schools except in social ways. And so I stuck with that. And I'm sure of this, that Pat Murphy succeeded me, and then he left, and he was replaced by the current superintendent, Francisco Durand. As it turned out, of course, I knew Patrick. Francisco was a assistant or associate superintendent of something or other in the Fairfax County Public Schools, but he also taught as an adjunct in the graduate program where I was working at Payson. So I got to know him there, and so we've maintained a relationship there. So I hear from time to time stuff that's going on in schools, and I hear from teachers still.
Yeah, you touched it a little bit. Well, you touched on like the sort of like the achievement and like the gap difference between. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little more about like that, as well as like other issues that were sort of like changes that were arising in APS in like, you know, '90s and the 2000s?
One of the major issues, in addition to the achievement gaps. And those are gaps based upon race, income. But we focus most heavily on the African-American white difference, Latino white difference. And we actually made significant progress. We did not close the gap, which is not a great surprise. But the distance narrowed considerably, particularly as measured by the state tests, whatever they're called now. They were called
SOL.
It's still SOL? Oh, okay. You see how good I was about staying out of school business? That stands right, standards of learning. So we saw certainly not a closing, but a real narrowing for both African American and Latino youngsters.
Yeah, well, in terms of issues of like, you know, sort of like overcrowding and like just construction equity, that type of stuff, how do you think how did APS sort of face those?
Well, we had a major problem, and we actually had an advantage in that we were not growing quickly at that time, so we did a lot of work in terms of rehabilitating buildings and then building buildings. And I should have looked up how many we built time that I was there, but we certainly had more than 20 fairly major construction projects. That includes actual new schools as well. But we maintain the same number of high schools.
I was just a little curious on that, because especially if you look at like schools like Yorktown and WNL, there's like a lot of kids there. It's like a couple hundred, I think. So I was a little curious on that. Like, you know, that number started to ramp up.
Yeah, all three of them are large high schools.
Yeah, very.
And but all three of them are in very good shape. WNL's new school. Parts of Wakefield. No, but Wakefield essentially.
Wakefield looks pretty good.
And Yorktown is largely new.
Could you tell me more about the rising achievement, the eliminating the gap plans? Because you touched on like how there was like the distance closed like significantly, but it wasn't like fully successful.
Yeah, I'm not sure it could have been.
Yeah.
It's more than ethnicity that's involved. That happens to be the identification of those youngsters, but there's also a real income difference across the three major groups that we were measuring. So we did see a narrowing, and we felt good about that, and would have been better headed. Had you not been able to predict that one group would do better than another group.
How did you narrow?
How? We gave it a lot of attention. We made certain that we had a focus on that as our number one issue. And that remained for the entire time I was there, and I think it remained after I left. You know, one of the things I told you is I tried to not pay any attention to the schools once I left. I didn't want to become a problem for them. And the approaches taken vary by subject matter. But all of the people working in social studies, for example, had that as their goal, and they worked on it. Same thing in mathematics, language arts, science. And we began to see narrowing. And we not only looked at it from a variety of different perspectives, we reported on it to our board and to our public. We started out by saying, this is a big problem, folks. We need to do something about it. And we started doing that. And so we also, dollars also followed that. And that became our primary work. One of the things that helped me anyway, and I think a number of our leaders, was we joined up with another group of school districts led by, it was a group that was started by the fellow who is the superintendent of the Evanston, Illinois public schools. I still remember his medieval high, it was a one high school district. It was a big high school. And it was this medieval building. It was right across a couple of parking lots from Northwestern University. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. But anyway, it was a one high school district, and he worked with another superintendent from, was it from Illinois? It was from Illinois. And they we got together in a meeting in, I still remember the location of the meeting, in New Orleans. It was the American Association of School Administrators Convention. And about 9 or 10 of us were invited, asked if we wanted to become part of it. We were the only Mid-Atlantic school district at the time that was involved. But I invited the Alexandria people to become involved if they could be accepted and so forth, and of course they were. And all of the school districts were relatively small. Evanston, for example, probably had 10,000 kids, maybe. And most of the districts had university ties. Evanston, of course, had Northwestern, which is a small little school. And we had Madison, Wisconsin, Cambridge, Massachusetts. We were once going to go with, when we changed from Evanston High School as our meeting place, we were originally going to go to Harvard. Because one of my good friends and also was very effective at being assisting us. We maintained relationships with scholars who were focused on this issue. There was a fellow at Harvard that really wanted us to be at Harvard. I would have liked that too, actually. I enjoyed visiting Cambridge. Anyway, the organization still persists. I believe Arlington still belongs. I don't know it's the degree to which it exercises leadership or not. And I think they meet now in Madison. I'm not sure about that. The last time I had anything to do with Minority Student Achievement Network was I spoke at a meeting, maybe a meeting in Chicago, maybe 4 years ago, something like that.
So you've still been very involved in terms of this.
I was working at a university and was still involved.
What are some of the for someone who's been teaching and in the superintendent position for all this for so long, what do you think are some of the greatest challenges that lie ahead for APS?
Well, I shouldn't speak about APS because, as I said, I try to stay out of it. But I think there is still a fairly sizable achievement gap based upon income and the degree to which also it's based on race. I'm not certain any longer because I don't look at those statistics. But if it's like the rest of the country, that's still an issue.
I definitely feel like post-pandemic, I feel like income has also become a fairly big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think APS can sort of combat that and sort of help support these students? Do you think?
Well, one way is through the kinds of resources you throw at things. And part of that has to do with how good the resources are. So that includes strategies and the teachers who are using the strategies, and the degree of commitment to that goal by the political actors. And the political actors include more than just the school board; it also includes the county board. And I think that commitment's still there. I say that with little knowledge. But I believe that's continued.
Yeah. So, as someone who has a lot of friends in the APS system, I feel a lot of them do, think that their teachers and, principals, they may not like them the best because they're still their teachers at the end of the day, but they do talk about how they are very committed and they're kind of at least passionate about what they want to teach.
Yeah. That's a major portion of the focus that we took, which was I was promoting something early on called Teacher as Researcher. And the idea was that we would involve teachers in research in their own classrooms and in one another's classrooms. And they also formed cooperatives where part of the objective was to improve the quality of teaching by having teachers look at other teachers, their colleagues, and provide feedback. So rather than just having, for example, an assistant principal come in and fill out some kind of a form on the period of teaching, you'd have teachers working on it. And so we formed cooperative groups working together. And as I said, teachers, researcher, I don't know if it would qualify as a movement, but there was certainly a drive in that direction.
Is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No. I've talked too much.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, thank you so much for coming. It was an honor to talk to you, sir.
I enjoyed it.